What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, rocking and rolling. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. Last night, we saw a sensational moment in sports where I said earlier, Caitlin Clark is the female version of Steph Curry, and she also displayed Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes-like tendencies on the basketball court last night, and even had the late, great Kobe Bryant kind of instinct and mentality when the game did end, and she made sure to say the job's not done yet. But we all know the magnitude of that game. And I don't want to compare it, obviously, to 1980. But in 1980 with the U.S. men's hockey team, where they beat the Soviets, that's the most talked about moment from that run. There was still a game, though, after that that secured the gold medal for the USA hockey team against Finland. Now, you always remember, right, Herb Brooks, and it was once again displayed in the movie Miracle, where he said, if you lose this game, you'll take this one to your grave. Because the moment of elation and the moment of euphoria and the moment that will always be engraved in our memories was obviously the victory up against the Soviets. But in this run with Iowa, and they're on right now, that's why you had Kim Mulkey say it feels like this game should be at the Final Four, because it was at the national championship game a year ago. Now, there was reasons early on to doubt LSU, and with the Tigers, right, even Angel Reese was benched to start the season. You know, they had some losses, and then they found a way to get it together. And I think the committee, they won't say this, but I don't think they wanted to roll the dice with how much extra attention it would bring. And I believe that it was done on purpose to make sure that that game wasn't at the Final Four. Because when you get to the Elite Eight, which you saw last night, and it's like, oh, LSU and Iowa's there, everyone's sitting there and saying, well, why isn't this game being played a week, you know, a week from now, you know, or on the weekend or on Friday at the Final Four? It's easy to say then, but it's clear that the committee had some doubt with LSU. And they didn't want to roll the dice with how many other great stories there are with USC, who their run came to an end last night with Juju Watkins. You have Paige Buckets getting back to form with UConn after the injury. We know South Carolina is undefeated with Dawn Staley. NC State did wind up getting to the men's and women's Final Four. So I'm sure people probably will say, oh, well, LSU should have been where NC State was, but then still, you would have had to have had LSU beat South Carolina to get to the championship game because they were on opposite sides of the bracket. So I think the committee did this on purpose, where they knew the magnitude of this game and how this would be the most important game of the tournament. So yes, ideally, you'd rather have it at the Final Four. Or in the perfect world, you'd rather have it in the championship game again. But you don't want to run that risk of not getting it. So to just survive a few rounds and not ask anything more to then have a spot to play and get into the Final Four, it doesn't have the same kind of feel as if it was in the Final Four of the championship game, just with the magnitude, but it's still something that's pretty significant. And even though it was talked about leading up to the game with Kim Mulkey saying this should be at the Final Four, it's not like anyone last night said, you know what, I'm not going to tune into Iowa and LSU because it's not at the Final Four. That was a huge event last night. That event was enormous, where there's never really a time that I could recall where it felt like the entire world was watching a women's basketball game. And I know that there was nothing really else on last night, right? You had hockey on, you had NBA regular season on, but there was no men's tournament game. But even if you had men's tournament on last night, I would have preferred to watch the women's tournament. And that's just not with one isolated game. Like, yes, Iowa and LSU, it does help with the storylines with Kim Mulkey, and you have Angel Reese, and you also have, in addition to that, K- Caitlin Clark and that just phenomenal story and what she was able to do last night, not only the 41 points, but the big difference of the game was the 12 assists and the 9 3-pointers. But LSU is a more well-rounded team than Iowa. And you had two other players for Iowa last night get into double figures. And that was like the reason why they ended up winning the game, because you knew Caitlin Clark was going to get hers. It was, can anyone else get there? And they were able to have two other teammates that did pop off last night. So when you look back at that matchup and people say, oh yeah, you wish it was at the Final Four, the committee wanted to guarantee that we were going to see that. And for Iowa, the job's not done yet. Like, you beat LSU. You lost to them last year in a championship game. You go on to win the championship. This would still be probably the most memorable part of the run, just from a broad sense, where, and what I mean by that is, like, I'm not a P1 women's college basketball fan. You know, most of us watching last night haven't watched the entirety of the season. And I understand there's been record-breaking attendance, record-breaking viewership, and all that. But a lot of people listening to this show right now don't religiously follow women's college basketball. So for us, when we look things in a very vague sense, there is no bigger game from a feel standpoint in women's college basketball this year than Iowa and LSU, because of how many people watched it last year, and then we saw it once again this year with two enormous stars in Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. But with that being said, Iowa now goes up against UConn in the next round. And you have someone who was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark, right? In terms of national recognition. Like 2-3 years ago, Paige Beckers, that nickname Paige Buckets, was talked about nonstop. And then the unfortunate injury, and she had to miss all of last season. So you go from that to now Paige is having her return, and Caitlin got her redemption last night. And you had the legendary UConn program coached by Gino Auriemma, and he's got, you know, his star player back. And that's going to, like, you, just from the way both of those women played last night, to now we get to see it go from how hyped it was for not only Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, but then in addition to that, you had Juju Watkins go up against Paige Beckers, to now then see the next game be Iowa against UConn. That's going to be phenomenal. And then think about this. If Caitlin Clark wins, in all likelihood, no disrespect to NC State, they're going to get South Carolina. So yes, last night was the night, but it's not like the story ends there. And that's the beauty of women's college basketball right now. It's not just Caitlin Clark. We've talked about Angel Reese at LSU. We've talked about Juju at USC. We've talked about Paige at UConn. And then the program right now in South Carolina, who is undefeated. It gives you an incentive to continue to watch. Because if it was just Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, there'd be no reason to watch. But to have this many stars, all within the same age playing right now, and rivalries being built, and multiple years of storylines, that's what gets us to watch this women's tournament. And the men's tournament really doesn't have that. Where, yes, Donovan Klingon is going to join us in a bit. He's been there for 2 years. DJ Burns had to go from Tennessee to Winthrop, and now is breaking out with NC State. You know, Zach Edey has been a consistent story at Purdue. Like, there's stories there, but they pale in comparison to the women's game. And a lot of people will say, oh, it's because of NIL and women's basketball. Like, the salaries are not, I don't want to say they're not great, you know, to a regular person, like to most of us regular people, you know, making, you know, the most a women's college basketball player, women's professional basketball player makes in WNBA is like $250,000. You know, Caitlin Clark next year is going to make $75,000 in all likelihood as her base salary. So that's still, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful. That's still good money. But in the men's game, you're making a whole lot more. So it's, you go to college and you want to get out of college as quick as possible. You don't see that continuity a lot in the men's game. They're trying to bring it back. Like everyone says about Kentucky, oh, maybe they should go away from one and dones. And then you're not going to get as many stars, and you want to then have Cal develop players for 3 or 4 years. I don't know if that's necessarily going to work. But here's the thing that no one's talking about. So the NBA, you just have to be 1 year out of high school. So that's where the term one and done happens. You go to college for 1 year, and then you're done, and you're off to the pros. You know, there was a time you could just go right out of high school. But in women's college basketball, you have to be 22 years old to enter the WNBA, which I did not know that. And once again, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert about something that I'm not. But that's a big reason. It's the system and the structure. Like, if that rule was there and they said, okay, you don't have to be one and done anymore in men's college basketball, you can't enter the NBA until you're 22, there would be more continuity because that's the way the system is designed. And in the women's game, you have to be bare minimum 22 before you could declare to go pro. Now, I'm not going to dismiss the name, image, and likeness part of it because Caitlin Clark probably makes more this year at Iowa than what she's going to make in her base salary next year in the WNBA. It will still come with a tremendous amount of marketing opportunities. And right, the Big Three already offered her a $5 million contract a year, which she's not going to take. So NIL does play a factor, but she wasn't allowed to declare for the WNBA until this year. Now, she could have came back for another season. She elected not to. Angel Reese has the decision to make as well. But that's a big part of this that isn't talked about. So that's why I think right now, because right, a lot of us parachute in to the college basketball season. The regular season doesn't get a ton of coverage. You know, there'll be moments where you talked about it here or there. But even though you're in a professional sports world where it's part of the business, you see a lot more continuity, obviously, in professional sports. So then you expect that for someone that parachutes in college sports, and in the men's game, you've had bigger coaches retire like Coach K, Roy Williams, Jay Wright, who were the face of college basketball, and those are the faces of college basketball for so long, and now it's like, oh, we don't have that many men's stars. Because if you really are a big-time star in college basketball, the most you're staying is 2 years. Like Donovan Klingon's going to join us coming up in about 8 minutes or so. And when he joins us, like, I'll ask him, is this actually it at UConn? When I ask him that, I know he's going to say, you know, I haven't made the decision yet. I'm focused on what's next, blah, 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 blah. And I'm focused on only the tournament. But he's absolutely going to the NBA after this year because now he's getting projected as a top 10, top 5 pick. So when you get projected that way and there's that much more money to make in the NBA, you're going to take that opportunity. If you're not, though, a projected lottery pick, you may want to stay in college because you'll get more NIL money. But the system in men's basketball compared to women's basketball is one and done in the men's game. You got to be 22 to go pro and enter the WNBA draft. And that's something that's not talked about a lot. And quite frankly, I didn't know that until a few days ago when we were talking about it around the office, like, what's the biggest difference between the men's and the women's game? And people say, oh, the stars and the star presence in the women's game. And maybe it's lightning in the bottle in the women's game. But you have a run now where Paige and Angel and Caitlin are all 21, 22. And then you have a younger star who we got to see a little bit last night in Juju. And it's, can you find that next wave of stars, assuming Angel goes to the pros, Caitlin we already know is going to the pros, and, you know, Paige with her future as well. And ultimately, when you have stars and you can build continuity with those stars and storylines, that's what draws a big audience in sports. That's what gets us to the TV set. And years ago, right, people would say, oh, it's women's basketball, I'm not going to watch. But the star presence has been that deep and has been that headline kind of worthy and headline catchy that it has drawn a lot of us that wouldn't watch to watch. But that age difference is big. And I know now people are going to say, well, should the NBA maybe make their age limit a little bit later? I don't think so. Like, I think you should have the power to choose when you want to go professional. Like, I don't love, it's better for us as a viewer and a consumer, I don't love that the WNBA makes you be 22. I don't. But it's been successful for the sport of women's basketball, as you've seen in the last 2-3 years. But I'm not going to sit here and say the NBA needs to up their age requirement as well. Donovan Klingon's going to join us next. UConn, in the women's side, is off to the Final Four. In the men's side, we know they're also off to the Final Four. The defending national champs will be going up against Alabama Saturday evening.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We continue. This is Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. The defending champion UConn Huskies are going back to the Final Four. They'll do battle in Phoenix, Arizona, coming up Saturday evening up against the Alabama Crimson Tide. And now joining us is a star player from the UConn Huskies, their big man in Donovan Clingan. Donovan, always appreciate the time. Congratulations. Thanks so much. And how have things been?
Good. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Things have been great. You know, got back to the Final Four, back in the gym, practicing with the guys, trying to, you know, prepare for some high level competition and, you know, just get ready to go to Phoenix.
How do you process going back to the Final Four when reality starts to set in? That's a goal of your guys all throughout the season, was to get back to this spot to have a legit chance to defend your title. Now that it's here, just how do you kind of look back and process on the journey?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's unreal. You know, every basketball player as a little kid dreams of, you know, playing in the Final Four, playing in that national championship game. And, you know, to make it to the Final Four 2 years in a row, it's a, you know, dream come true. Just to perform at the highest stage of, you know, the highest level of, you know, basketball that you could, like, that you could perform at. You know, college is a, you know, another level. And, you know, just the Final Four, the competition, the teams you're playing, the, you know, when you get out there, the atmosphere, everything that goes on, the experience, you know, you remember these moments forever. And, you know, but you really just, you don't take anything for granted. You know, we're all going to be hungry. We're all going to be, you know, wanting to win. And, you know, that's just one thing that's special about this team is, you know, this team will never get complacent and we're going to go out there and give everything we got.
It doesn't matter what school you play for. It doesn't matter where you cut down those nets when you're able to do that and you know you're going to the Final Four. It's very special and surreal. You being someone, though, that grew up in Connecticut and grew up cheering for the UConn Huskies, now to play for them and also to be in TD Garden after an Elite Eight victory and you're cutting down the nets and you were a Celtics fan growing up as a kid. I see the smile on your face. That just had to be a little extra special, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you grow up in Connecticut, you know, you're born and raised – and you know, when you get to college and you throw that Connecticut jersey on across your chest every day, you know, it means a lot to me, you know, just to represent the state at, you know, a high level. And, you know, this is such a historic program that's, you know, made a lot of history. So just trying to insert myself into that history. And, you know, that's what everyone on this team's doing. You know, we're just trying to become a part of history, do something special. But, you know, for me to be from Connecticut and be able to, you know, represent the state at a high level means a lot. And, you know, like you said, cut down the nets at TD Garden. You know, I never thought that would happen. You know, that's a dream come true for sure. You know, there's a lot of legends that have walked that floor, walked those hallways. You know, so, you know, I'm, you know, extremely blessed for the opportunities I've been given to, you know, playing here at UConn. You know, I'm not going to take this one coming for granted.
Donovan Clingan is my guest right now. UConn back in the Final Four. The defending champions will go up against Alabama on Saturday for a trip to go to the national championship game on Monday night. It feels like, Donovan, this group is as hungrier as ever. Sometimes when you win a championship, I know there's so much change in the sport. Some complacency sets in. Why is this group just as hungry, if not even hungrier, than the group from a year ago?
You know, really just for the returners, you know, that feeling of winning last year was the best feeling that you could ever, you know, you could ever feel of, you know, playing this sport. You know, it was just such an unreal experience. And, you know, if you want to be great, if you want to go on to do great things, you know, you got to fall in love with winning. You can't get, you know, happy with where you're at. You know, you got to keep on wanting more, keep on trying to achieve more. And, you know, I feel like that's one thing with these returners that really try to do, you know, but, you know, bringing in these new guys, the freshmen, this transfer, you know, really just trying to do it for them and, you know, get them to experience what, you know, winning at the highest level is like. And, you know, just, you know, like I said, trying to insert ourselves in history. You know, it's a special place to be. We got a special coaching staff. You know, Coach Shirley really instills, you know, that hard work into us and, you know, that hunger of, you know, just keep on wanting to win. You know, he really you know, doesn't take it easy on us. He always pushing us, even though we've six, you know, done some great things this year. You know, we all realize what, you know, our ultimate goal is.
I absolutely love Coach Danny Hurley, but what was your first impression of him when you first got to meet him back in the recruiting process?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I watched a lot of games, you know, came to a lot of games throughout the recruiting process. And, you know, you just see his energy and his love for the players. You know, I used to go watch a bunch of practices and, you know, I'd be like, oh, wow. I mean, this seems brutal. You know, he's yelling at you. He's pushing you to a, you know, a level that, you know, people have never been pushed to. And, you know, I feel like that's something I needed was, you know, being pushed to that, you know, that next level. And, you know, coach is doing that, you know, but even though it may not seem it with all the yelling he does, but he really loves us. He really wants what's best for us. And he's just, you know, he's putting us in the best position to be as successful as possible. And, you know, I give Coach a lot of credit because, you know, we got a lot of talented players on this team, you know, who could go score the ball, you know, at will. But, you know, he always puts people in the best position to, you know, succeed at a high level as a team. And, you know, he just wants to win. And, you know, I would go to war with him every single day.
It's one thing to go on a 10-0 run. It's one thing to go on like a 15-0 run, but a 30-0 run is just out of this world. Just how do you even describe? I know you guys are great. You're the team to beat in the tournament, but how do you even describe how that was possible that you guys were able to go on a 30-0 run?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like none of us really had any idea what the run actually was. You know, we were just having so much fun out there. You know, this team just loves playing for the guy next to us. We love playing, you know, to see other people succeed. We're not worried about our own stats. We're not worried about, you know, how many points we finish with at the end of the game. You know, we're just worried about, you know, as long as UConn wins, you know, everyone's happy. You know, and we were just going through that run, playing the best defense that we possibly can. And, you know, just sharing the ball on offense, finding the open man and, you know, making the right reads. And, you know, that's just one thing that we were trying to do to, you know, break the other team's will. And, you know, we just kept trying to put them away, you know, even though we were on a 12-0 run at some point, you know, we didn't take the foot off the gas. We kept going because, you know, we're trying to end team season at, you know, at the Elite Eight, you know, and teams aren't just going to walk away. They're not going to just give up. So, you know, we really got to try to put teams away. And I feel like, you know, that's what we tried to do. And, you know, our defensive intensity and our defense was unreal.
You know, this group, they make it look so easy. I know it's not actually easy and there's a lot of work that gets put into it. But why does this group from afar seem like you guys don't fall to the pressure of everyone say, okay, we're gunning, we're going to give UConn our best effort because we know they're the team to beat in this tourney?
Yeah, I mean, no one practices like we do. You know, our intensity in practice, the way we practice, how long we practice for, and, you know, it's harder than the games. It's, you know, it's more than the games, and I feel like that prepares us to play at, you know, any length of game, any type of game, and, you know, really takes the pressure off of us. You know, coach puts us in positions throughout practice that, you know, we feel pressure to, you know, try to win drills, try to win, you know, segments of a live or, you know, free throw games or, you know, just like little stuff. You know, he builds that pressure into practice. So when it comes to the game, it's just like, you know, it's natural and, you know, we're not over, you know, working ourselves up and, you know, being stressed out.
Donovan Klingon here with us. How about the individual attention you receive? We see you now getting projected as a top five pick in the upcoming NBA draft. We know that you're the star player of this team. From last year to this year, it's been a big jump and there's more expected out of you. How have you been dealing with that individual attention?
Yeah, I mean, I just block it out. You know, I realize what's at stake. I realize what's in front of me right now. And, you know, I try to, you know, tell myself you only could control, you know, what's in front of you right now, you know, and that's two games, hopefully this weekend and Saturday and Monday, you know, really not thinking about what's next or not thinking about, you know, the future. It's really just, you know, what can I control right now? Don't listen to, you know, the outside noise of, you know, what people are saying, you know, and really just work your butt off to, you know, achieve high things. You know, people could say whatever they want, you know, but you really got to put the work in to try to, you know, make it to where you want to make it to. And, you know, really for me, I'm just worried about UConn. I'm just worried about this team. And I'm just worried about, you know, going out there and trying to compete for a national championship.
I respect that answer, but I have to ask it. When you get set for the Final Four, do you feel like this is your last run at UConn with all the NBA speculation?
No. You know, like I said, you know, I really haven't thought about next year, thought about, you know, what I plan on doing. You know, and I love UConn so much. I love being here. I love the staff. And I love the culture. You know, walking this building every day puts a smile on my face. You know, so whenever the time does come, it's going to be hard to say, you know, goodbye to this program. But, you know, I'll be, you know, I don't see, I'm not thinking about next year. I'm not thinking about the future right now.
Let me ask you about Alabama, the opponent, talking about the future. There's what is next for you. We all know that you two both have incredible offenses. Defense is going to win this game. How do you guys lock down defensively to try to contain this juggernaut that is Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, they're a great offensive team. They shoot the ball at a high level. We just got to, stick to our script, stick to what we've been doing and, just raise our intensity to another level because, the level we're playing at and, where we're playing at. We're playing in the Final Four game, against a really good Alabama team. So, they're going to raise their level. We have to raise our level. And we just got to guard. They're very, they move the ball well on offense. They make a lot of threes. They get to the rim, and they're well coached, so we just got to really put the work in this week in practice, lock into the film, lock into the scout, and, just be ready to attack this matchup.
For so many years in college basketball, Donovan Klingon, people have said guards win this time of the year, backcourts win this time of the year. You've been dominated at UConn as a big man. We've seen what DJ Burns has done, another big man at NC State. We know the biggest guy, Zach Edey, has been on some run at Purdue. What does it say about the big man right now in this sport?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, big men have a big impact on, how teams play and how the game's, going. They have a big impact in the paint on offense. The big men are the ones setting the screens to get the guards open. They're rebounding the ball, blocking shots, defending the rim, defending the paint. We just try to be as dominant as possible. For me personally, I can't speak on, everyone else's behalf, but for me personally, I just go into the game every game of like, all right, how am I going to protect the rim at a high level? How am I going to rebound at a high level? And how am I going to, help my team win any way possible? Whether that's 15 rebounds, 10 blocks and 0 points, I'm willing to do that. For me, it's just trying to have an impact on the game and, give the other team different looks, with between me and Samson about, different offensive looks, different defensive looks. And, really just as bigs, we're just trying to dominate the game and, dominate and impact our team any way we can.
Before I let you run, this is nothing new. At UConn, the men's dominate, and then the women's team also dominates as well. You guys are both now in the Final Four. Just to see Paige overcome all the adversity and UConn punch that ticket last night to another Final Four on the women's side, just what did that mean to you?
I mean, it's really cool. I'm happy for them. I obviously, Paige last year didn't have the years, she expected, through last year and this summer, I've seen all the work she's put in and, how much time she spends in the facility trying to get better. And that whole team, they've had a rough year with injuries and, everything that's happened on their side. So just to see them, succeeding at a high level and, performing at the best of the best and, make it to the Final Four, I'm happy for them. I'm rooting for them. And I hope they go out there and get the job done.
Yeah. How much have you been paying attention to the women's tournament with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese? You have Dawn Staley and the undefeated South Carolina team. Have you been paying a lot of attention to it?
Yeah, I've been watching the games. Last night was a great, great night for, the sport. Watching Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, battle that one out. That was a good game. And, watching Juju and Paige in that second game, it's great. Been definitely tuning in.
Yeah, last thing I'll ask you, Donovan Klingon. We always say this, that this UConn team feels like it's better than last year's UConn team. What do you think about that since you're on both those teams?
Yeah, it's hard. I feel like, it's a whole group of different players that play totally different. We're still, coached the same, intensity-wise and, how hard we play and what we're doing on the floor. Last year I feel like, just certain positions, there was, just different looks. Sometimes last year we were a little bit better at putting teams away, towards the end of games. And, right now this year's team is, doing a better job at that. But it's really hard to say, which team's better. They're both two teams that were filled with a bunch of special guys. And, I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Well, I appreciate the time. Good luck coming up this weekend. Thanks so much and appreciate you coming on today.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Caitlin Clark, and some more Caitlin Clark. Let's hear people talk about Caitlin Clark. We start off with Kim Mulkey, the head coach of the LSU Tigers, who commented on Caitlin Clark's sensational performance as Her Tigers are going home, and the Hawkeyes of Iowa are advancing to the Final Four.
You got to guard her. Nobody else seems to be able to guard her. We didn't even guard her last year when we beat them. She's just a generational player, and she just makes everybody around her better. That's what the great ones do. What did I say to her? I said, I sure am glad you leaving. I said, girl, you something else. Never seen anything like it.
It's almost the way that we talk about Nikola Jokic, where it's like, you know, he's going to get his and she is going to get hers. But it's, can you stop the others? And the part with Nikola Jokic is, if you try to let him get his, he'll throw 45 points. But the problem with Nikola Jokic, if you try to take away, right, the like his individual abilities, he'll thrive more off passing the basketball. With her, it was always, will the teammates show up? Because last year, even Kim Mulkey said it, they didn't really stop her in the national championship game. And they didn't stop her the other night, but she was able to get 12 assists last night. And even though it was 40 points and 9 3-pointers, the 12 assists, which stood out to be the most, because you had two other players that went for double digits. And going into that game, and everyone was on Iowa, and the line was moving in big favor of Iowa. It moved a full point from when we got off the air yesterday until the ball was tipped, and we got off the air at 6 p.m. Eastern, and the ball was thrown up in the air at 7:15 p.m. Eastern. But, like, you see just the production around her. We didn't know if that was going to work last night. And for LSU, right, they're a well-rounded team, but it didn't matter because no one was beating Caitlin Clark plus others helping out Caitlin Clark for Iowa. I do find it funny, though, Stu, how Kim Mulkey was just like, there's really nothing that you could do. And she's 100% right. And not only that, Haley Van Lith, I felt bad for her last night. Because that was the one problem with Kim Mulkey in the game. They kept her on Caitlin Clark way too long. Caitlin Clark is 6 feet tall. Haley Van Lith is 5'7". Like, there were moments in the game where Haley was in great position on Caitlin Clark. Like, you couldn't play better defense. But when there is a difference of 3 inches in height, like, what are you supposed to do? Or more than 3 inches, excuse me, in height. What the heck are you supposed to do? 5'7 against 6 foot. We're talking about, like, almost a 5-inch difference there. Like, there is nothing that could have been done last night, and there's nothing Haley Van Lith could have done better. And you're almost like, well, why didn't Flaje Johnson get on her more? Like, why didn't Kim Mulkey put Flaje on Caitlin Clark more? It was almost that they said, all right, let's have Haley, who we know is like an energizer, like a big energizer type of player. Let's have her just always be on Caitlin Clark, even if she can't block Caitlin Clark and really contest her shot that much. And then our other players, let's not have them exert their energy in trying to defend Caitlin Clark, because there was no answer to defend Caitlin Clark. Let's listen up to Haley Van Lith on Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin's very skilled. She's a great player. She hit some tough shots, and there's not a whole lot you can do about some of the threes she hit. And I think, you know, her role, or the team around her that plays a role, they did a good job of executing their role. So, you know, ultimately they played better than us, and that's what it was.
And the moment I felt bad for her, and I know we all love the sensation that is of Caitlin Clark, where she looks like she's Steph Curry with the three-point ability. She has that killer instinct like a Tom Brady and a Patrick Mahomes. She has that mentality of the late, great Kobe Bryant. Job's not done yet. But I felt bad for Haley Van Lith last night, because there was one moment where she kind of gave the Jordan shrug, but it wasn't the way that Jordan meant it. Like, oh, you can't stop me. She said, there's nothing else I could do. I am 5'7". She's 6 foot. There's nothing else that I could do. What's more believable, by the way, Stu? Because I don't think Haley Van Lith is actually 5'7". I think she's shorter. The listed weight of DJ Burns being 275 pounds or Haley Van Lith being 5'7". What do you think is more true to scale?
Wow, I would say neither, but I'd say Haley being 5. I mean, I don't believe either, but I'd say, yeah, Haley's probably a more believable,
like,
one.
She's probably 5'6".
Yeah.
Maybe 5'5". I don't know if she's 5'5", but probably five. So you're you're embellishing an inch.
Yeah.
DJ Burns, no
more
offense,
than a few pounds. Yes.
He's got to be like 325, I would say.
I would think so. Definitely a three in front of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. Probably, like you said, probably closer to 325.
I still can't believe Rich Eisen. Did you see this clip on social media? Rich Eisen was interviewing DJ Burns, and he's like, when did you really, like, round out? And he's basically saying, like, when did you put on the weight? Like, when did you get big? And DJ Burns just looked at him in DJ Burns fashion and was just like, excuse me, sir? Like, he, like, dropped his head and, like, raised the eyebrows. He was like, excuse me? Are we really doing this? You basically, you call me fat, and I will not allow any fat shaming of DJ Burns, all right? I am the police of fat shaming here on CBS Sports Radio. I didn't like when DA called Mraz fat. I didn't like when Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson called Zion Williamson fat. And I didn't like it when Rich Eisen called DJ Burns fat as well. Even though we just said what's more true to scale, DJ Burns being 275 pounds or Haley Van Lith being 5'7". But I'm a big fella. So big fella to big fella, we could talk about each other's weight. When you get those pesky folks just chiming into the conversation, we don't allow pesky people to talk about us larger folks. Let's go to Gino Auriemma and Caitlin Clark.
I hope Caitlin Clark had a personal agenda against LSU. And I know there's nothing personal between me and her, so I don't need to be seeing her drop 50 on us next weekend, you know? So I love her. I think she's the best player. Forget I ever said Paige's the best player in the country. I think she's the best player of all time. I don't know whoever said that I said that Paige is the best player in the country.
And that's Gino knowing, man, anything that I've said in the past and also the fact that he barely even recruited her, never had a conversation when she wanted to go to UConn, she's going to use that as motivation. Now, I don't want to be a casual here. Let me just point out, UConn is 2-0 going up against Caitlin Clark. This, honestly, I can't wait to watch this game later in the week. Just like how I couldn't wait to watch this Iowa-LSU game. And I think it's going to be phenomenal. But this journey, if she's able to win two more games, Caitlin Clark, we're talking about an all-time great run. From the LSU game to then potentially beating UConn, and then after that, potentially South Carolina. Man, that would be magnificent. Let's go to Victor Wembanyama. He was asked if he was surprised about getting fined for throwing the ball into the crowd.
Surprised. Let's say when I threw the ball, I thought maybe, yeah, like I remember players being fined for this, but it was always in a bad way, you know. I threw it not, you know, to make some guy's day, but it's funny. It's just funny, you know.
While the ball's in the air, you're thinking, oh no, that might be $25,000.
Yeah, kind of. But after that, I was like, no, that's fine. Like I threw it to, you know, to please somebody. It's not like I'm trying to hurt or
throwing it at somebody.
Yeah, I'm not, yeah.
They don't care about intent, I guess, on that.
Apparently.
This is what happens now. Like when Wembanyama beats the Knicks, they're at home. He throws the ball into the stands and he gets fined $25,000. Like, if he did it in a malicious way, okay, fine. But that was just fun. You win the game, you throw the ball in the stands. I know we've seen this before in the NFL. Anytime a player punts a ball into the stands or they throw the ball into the stands after scoring a touchdown, the No Fun League reigns supreme and they fine the players. But we're real. Like, the only reason to watch the Spurs is to see Victor Wembanyama. You're really fining him $25,000? Just ridiculous. Let's hear the play-by-play last night of a no-hitter for the Houston Astros. Here's Todd Callis.
Ground ball. Dubon throws to first. No hitter. Renaud Blanco, in his eighth career start, the 30-year-old makes magic on April Fool's Day.
Great call. Great moment for Renaud Blanco. But Stu, that's a bad sign for Major League Baseball that we have gone through a show of 3 hours. And with like a minute remaining in the show, it's the first mention of the no-hitter outside of Axe updates. Just kind of shows you how baseball in the regular season, it's like, okay, just get me to the postseason. And baseball was my first true love, right? But just the national appeal of baseball just is not there anymore.
It's also so many no-hitters now to where, like, you get multiple
watered
ones
down.
A year. I feel like they're
I still think
down.
It's unique.
If it's a perfect game, I think it would get a lot more praise. But to your point, yeah, we're barely talking about it on the network.
Yeah, and we talked about it before. Like, who's the best women's basketball player? Caitlin Clark. Who's the best NBA player? People will say, there's a bunch of different answers. LeBron, Joker, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Steph Curry. You go on and on and on. But at least you know a bunch. Right, a bunch of recognizable stars. Best NHL player, Connor McDavid. You know, best NFL player right now, Patrick Mahomes. You get to the MLB, it's like, okay, it's Ohtani, but now there's that gambling situation. Mike Trout never makes the playoffs. Mookie Betts is sensational. But there's no one that really draws in the national audience. It was Ohtani, and I still think it is Ohtani, but him going to the Dodgers, even though we want to see him in the postseason, does water it down. It's like, okay, just wait till we get to the postseason with Shohei Ohtani. And we don't know what's going to happen with the gambling. And now he's not pitching because of the Tommy John. So it takes away the one-on-one factor a little bit for now with Shohei Ohtani. All righty. That's a news brief. It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Fun action-packed show today. Hopefully we'll be in Arizona tomorrow as it's going to be a very interesting travel plan. But God willing, we are there. We'll be live in a Arizona affiliate in Phoenix tomorrow. And then Thursday, Friday, we will be live on Radio Row for the men's Final Four, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, noon to 3 p.m. Pacific. Big thanks to MVS joining us in studio today, Marcos Valdez-Scantling. Big thanks to Kyle McCord, Donovan Klingon as well. And each and every one of you, Stu and Samter, thank you too. We'll talk mañana, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace!
Hey everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.